It's Monday, June 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, worshippers return to the church where nine people were shot to death last week. In the wake of the violence, will U.S. lawmakers take up the issue of gun control?
We begin with neck bending.
गर्दन झुकाने वाली क्रिया के अभ्यास से शुरू करेंगे।
World Yoga Day was enjoyed by millions of people, especially across India. Also ahead, his life and career were cut short, but Jim Croce's music has lived a very long time. It's all on today's International Edition. Church bells in Charleston, South Carolina, where worshipers returned to a church there Sunday for the first service since a white gunman gunned down a Bible study group at the historic African-American church last week. Visiting minister Reverend Norval Goff stood in for the pastor of Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in the southeastern city of Charleston. Clementa Pinckney was among the nine killed Wednesday in what police are investigating as a hate crime. Visitors from Charleston and as far away as California packed into the House of Worship, and during the service, volunteers handed out water bottles and fans as the temperature inside the building soared in the summer heat. We welcome with us VOA's Amanda Scott, who was also inside the church.
I was. Beautiful service. Powerful. Crowded. It was beautiful to see so many people, both members and people that traveled from, you know, across the country to sit down and show their support and solidarity.
It seemed like it was a very uplifting service as well. I mean, they didn't really dwell on the tragedy as much as it was an actual happy service.
Exactly. I mean, you could see people consoling each other, particularly the members of the congregation who are still dealing with the loss. But overall, you know, just from the sermons and just from the songs, it was definitely uplifting. And they wanted to lift the mood and lift the spirits and show their appreciation for the city as a whole, for how they've come together amidst this tragedy.
And quite a crowd. I understand the church was definitely packed today.
It definitely was. People came, you know, an hour and a half early before service started just to get a space. The church has two levels. There's a balcony in the lower level. I'd say they could easily seat a couple of hundred people, and just about every seat was taken.
Was there any sort of security presence for the service today?
There was actually a pretty massive security presence. From inside the sanctuary, I counted seven police officers. There were about six on the lower level, and from what I could see, one on the upper level, but there was possibly one above me that I couldn't see. So between seven and eight police officers inside the church. Outside the church, there was security when you came in. All the women had to open up their bags and do a random bag check. So there were about, I'd say, a half a dozen police outside the church as well.
The tragedy, of course, is going to linger among the congregation for quite some time, despite an uplifting service. It's going to take a while for them to heal. What were some of the comments that you heard as you were inside the church?
Definitely when the pastor spoke and when other congregants spoke, they wanted to reflect on the beauty of their lives and not just dwell on the pain of their loss. After the service, I actually spoke to some of the church members who, you know, reflected similar thoughts of them being in heaven and still being a part of them and their community. And just, you know, it's more of a positive acceptance of what happened.
Outside of the church, what is the mood in the scene there and along the street?
Well, it was interesting. Actually, when you came outside of the church, the vigil is just continuing. There are preachers from other churches and other denominations, and there was a large showing of chaplains from the Southern Baptist Convention, you know, just handing out water, just greeting the church members and other people that were inside the church as they came out. You know, people are still traveling and laying flowers and taking photos. And, you know, right now there's a group of people singing outside, and it's still a quite strong vigil still going on.
The main services are held every Sunday, but there are a lot of other activities that happen throughout the week. Have you heard that the church will be open for those types of activities resuming?
They actually didn't mention it. It's possible that once the visitors and the non-congregants left, that they did mention it. I noticed that after the service, a lot of the actual church members were staying, and it appeared that they were going to have a meeting and talk amongst themselves. So, but as for us, I'm not sure what other events they will be having at the church as of now.
Thank you so much, Amanda.
You're welcome.
With us in the studio is Michael Lippin, who's been following the comments on social media following the shootings in Charleston. Michael,
hi,
welcome.
Thank you. Yes. Amanda Scott's report on Charleston is leading our website right now. It's titled, After Shooting, Charleston Church Reopens. I'd encourage our listeners to check it out just like I did, because the article actually has some nice video clips of the scenes inside and outside the Mother Emmanuel AME Church. In the piece, we've also embedded a video report from another member of our VOA team in Charleston, religion correspondent Jerome Sokolovsky. In that video clip filmed on Saturday, Jerome reports on the religious figures and others who have been flocking to Charleston as a kind of a pilgrimage in solidarity with that grieving community.
Great reports and great video, too. What kind of social media feedback have we been getting for our Charleston coverage?
Well, I've been looking at that as well, and I noticed that a Twitter user with the handle Wiser in Time tweeted a link to our main web story, along with a message that read, "Look at the beautiful people of the South Carolina AME Church. Blacks and whites united in peaceful demonstrations." Amanda's tweet of a photo from inside the church during Sunday's service also got attention. A Twitter account for the Church Security Institute replied to her tweet by saying, "May God's love, peace, comfort, and strength be with the Emmanuel AME families, friends, members, and city as they worship and grieve." If you'd like to tweet to Amanda, you can find her at Amanda Scott News. That's all one word. I'd also like to point out another Charleston story that we have on our website at the moment. It's by Victoria Maki and focuses on the confessed shooter Dylan Roof. Victoria's piece is headlined, "An Alleged Manifesto, Accused Church Shooter Details Hate." In that piece, Victoria describes what we know about Roof's white supremacist views from a manifesto and photos of him that were posted on the web before the church attack. Jim?
Great comments from our audience. Thank you so much for stopping by our website, voanews.com, and leaving your comments. If you haven't already, feel free to. And you can follow Michael on Twitter at Michael_Lippin. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that afflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This is International Edition. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. A renewed call for gun control legislation is being voiced by many in the wake of the church shooting last week in Charleston, South Carolina. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman sits down with me to discuss what, if any, outcome may take place on Capitol Hill.
Jim, last week's shooting in Charleston, South Carolina is not the first that we have seen in recent years. No one thinks it's going to be the last. A few years ago, there was a congresswoman shot in Arizona along with a number of bystanders. We had a horrific shooting at an elementary school in Connecticut and at a Colorado movie theater. And every time that this happens, there is a public clamoring for some sort of legislation to be passed, for something to be done to try to keep firearms out of the hands of dangerous people. And this all has the sensation of deja vu, because there's initially intense public passion on this, but eventually it wanes. And the history suggests that legislation simply does not materialize. From my perch at the Senate, I witnessed after the Connecticut elementary school shooting that legislation was produced to better scrutinize people who want to buy guns, more background checks, making sure that if you buy a gun, that you're not mentally unstable, that you don't have a violent history, which to many people sounds like a perfectly reasonable suggestion. But even in a democratically controlled Senate, because the Senate was controlled by the Democrats back then, a party that very much favors tougher regulations on firearms, that died. It did not advance. It was not passed in the Senate. And now with Republicans controlling both houses of Congress and a presidential election year coming up, the likelihood of legislation coming through would seem to be dim.
In the Senate, we do have a few candidates in the presidential run who might want to make some sort of a splash. As you mentioned, it takes an incident like this for it to come to the forefront and people saying, oh, we have to have tougher legislation. What are some of the biggest drawbacks to keeping it from being introduced, especially now with people running?
Right. Well, first, we have to recognize that in the Senate, all who are running for president, with one exception, are Republicans. There is one independent who's running as a Democrat. But all of the other Senate candidates are Republicans, and they are very much in the pro-Second Amendment, and it's the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution that proclaims the right of Americans to bear arms. Almost all of them showed up at the National Rifle Association's most recent annual convention earlier this year, and they all said that they would defend the Second Amendment from any attempt to infringe upon it. And the National Rifle Association in Washington is sort of the 800-pound gorilla of political machines. It is feared and respected. It has a stellar record of defeating candidates who are pro-gun control and electing candidates who are pro-gun rights. And they are very much feared. And Republicans know that if you want a ticket to elected office, one of the avenues you have to go through is the National Rifle Association. I should mention that this is not a strictly partisan issue. There are some Republicans who do favor some limits on guns, and there are some Democrats that are very strong gun rights proponents. So this is not a strictly Democrat against Republican issue.
Michael, thank you so much. Always on target with great reports from the Senate.
It's my pleasure, Jim.
This is VOA's International Edition. Did you stretch and bend yesterday to take part in the first ever International Yoga Day? Well, millions of people did across India Sunday. Anjana Pisricha tells us about a huge yoga event in New Delhi, joined by Prime Minister Narendra Modi.
We begin with neck bending.
गर्दन झुकाने वाली क्रिया के अभ्यास से शुरू करेंगे.
Sporting white yoga day t-shirts, thousands of school children, top leaders, officials and others bent and stretched for 35 minutes early Sunday on bright pink mats at Rajpath, a colonial era boulevard in the heart of New Delhi. Prime Minister Narendra Modi surprised many by stretching out on his yoga mat after extolling the ancient Indian art as not just an exercise to improve flexibility, but a path for mankind's inner development. Mr. Modi, a yoga practitioner for many years, said the day will mark a new era of peace.
ये सिर्फ और सिर्फ मानव कल्याण का कार्यक्रम है, तनाव मुक्त विश्व का कार्यक्रम है.
The Indian leader said this is a program for the benefit of mankind, for a tension-free world, and to spread the message of harmony. New Delhi's mega yoga session was the highlight of events, big and small, being held in almost every country to observe World Yoga Day. The United Nations agreed to observe the day after 177 countries co-sponsored Prime Minister Modi's call last September to hold such a day. Across India, tens of thousands of Indians, young and old, turned out to participate in yoga drills held in schools, neighborhood parks, and city streets. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
I misunderstood and ate a yogurt. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
The down-to-earth storytelling style of Jim Croce became a favorite among pop music listeners in the early 1970s, but sadly, at age 30, Jim Croce was killed in a small plane crash. International Edition's Steve Norman takes us back to Jim Croce's music, still enjoyed by his fans and new generations of listeners.
Uptown got its hustlers, Bowery got its bumps. 42nd Street got Big Jim Walker, he cool shooting son of a gun. Yeah, he big and dumb as a man can come, but he's stronger than a country house. And when the bad folks all get together at night, you know they all call Big Jim boss, just because. You see, you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't speed into the wind, you don't pull the mask off old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim.
James Joseph Jim Croce, born in 1943 and died in 1973, is among a number of talented artists taken from us all too soon. Jim Croce was an American singer-songwriter who's been described as the voice of America's working class. Between 1966 and 73, Croce released 5 studio albums and 11 singles.
Tried to find me an executive position, but no matter how smooth I talk, he wouldn't listen to the fact that I was a genius. The man says we got all that we can use. Now I got them steadily depressing, low down, mind messing, working at the car wash blues.
Croce sang about what he knew growing up in South Philadelphia, where he was part of a close-knit family that loved music. His friends, Melvin Goldfield and Cheech Marin, appeared on a VH1 exclusive looking back at Croce's life.
Yeah, well, the streets are all part of his blood, I think, you know, and it's part of mine as well. And it was exciting for us, it's sort of titillating to be out on the streets.
And, you know, we'd close places, we'd stay up till it got light. And I really miss that. I really, really miss that.
He should be smoking on a big cigar. But did I get myself straight? I guess I'll just have to wait in my rubber suit, rubber on this car.
Jim was the first in his family to graduate from college, attending Villanova University in a Philadelphia suburb. A few years before, Croce met his future wife, Ingrid Jacobson, also an accomplished singer.
I fell madly in love. I couldn't even imagine that life had ever existed before he walked into that room with that guitar.
Ingrid and Jim took to the road once they married. With no money in their pockets, they did have a huge love for making music. Just after performing to a sold-out crowd in Natchitoches, Louisiana, on September 20, 1973, Jim and six others boarded a chartered twin-engine Beechcraft plane, headed to their next gig in Texas. But they never made it. The plane crashed at the end of the runway into a grove of trees. No one survived.
Well, the one nice thought out of that is we do have CDs to continue to listen to Jim Croce's music, and we thank Steve Norman for telling us more about it. You've been listening to International Edition, and you can always find us at voanews.com. We thank you for joining us today. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington, and we hope you enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The terrorist group Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant, also known as ISIL or Daesh, has been engaged in the destruction and theft of some of the world's most important heritage sites and antiquities, dating back thousands of years. In late May, ISIL occupied the town of Tadmor, Syria, and the huge ruins of one of the great sites of the ancient world, the classical city of Palmyra. As part of its violent rampage through Syria and Iraq, ISIL has targeted for demolition sites of religious and cultural significance. Propaganda videos produced by the group depict its followers blowing up an ancient Assyrian palace at Nimrud, smashing statues at the Mosul Museum, and destroying the mosque of Nebi Yunus, which housed the tomb of Jonah, a place sacred to Muslims, Christians, and Jews. They are destroying and looting irreplaceable cultural property in order to intimidate and humiliate populations, and looted artifacts have become a significant source of income for terrorist groups, wrote Assistant Secretary of State for International Organization Affairs Sheba Crocker in a recent blog post. This is not just a cultural tragedy, said UNESCO's Director General Irina Bokova. It's also a security issue, with terrorists using the destruction of heritage as a weapon of war, an instrument of propaganda and destabilization, and as a means of financing their operations. The United States strongly supports UNSC Resolution 2199, which condemns the wanton destruction of cultural heritage in Iraq and Syria. It also reaffirms an existing ban on the sale of Iraqi antiquities illegally removed from the country and requires all member states to take additional appropriate steps to prohibit the smuggling of Syrian antiquities. Along these lines, the U.S. State Department recently funded the reissue of the emergency red list of Iraqi cultural objects at risk to alert the public to types of antiquities most at risk of smuggling and trafficking, and co-hosted with UNESCO a roundtable discussion on this issue moderated by Assistant Secretary of State Evan Ryan. We also call on all U.N. member nations to start enforcing UNESCO's 1970 flagship convention aimed at prohibiting the illicit trade in cultural property. 128 of the 195 member states have signed the convention, but only some, like the U.S., Switzerland, and U.K., implement it through national legislation. The United States and UNESCO are leading the efforts to protect antiquities, monuments, and sites that hold universal value for mankind, wrote Assistant Secretary Crocker. For both the United States and the U.N., preserving diverse cultural heritage is a critical step toward reconstruction, reconciliation, and building civil society.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.